It's probably within 2 days I was home back in the United States after all of that. So the next morning I left Afghanistan, flew to Kuwait, then to Germany, then home. So it was within a day and a half or so I was home, which seems nice. Like it's great to be home and everything. That's a good thing. But I had like absolutely zero decompression time after literally being in a firefight and all of that, and dealing with the loss of my brother. It was just such a roller coaster of emotions. Everything that was going on during those days were so incredibly difficult to deal with. And I don't think, like, after getting home, I don't think I really knew how to pick that back up, the grief back up, and actually deal with it. So I struggled a lot with anger issues and depression and drinking and all these other things just that were not healthy, not helping anything. And so eventually I ended up getting some help and trying to kind of turn things back around.
Welcome to Your Story Doesn't End Here, the mental health podcast of military and veterans who refuse to be silenced. I'm your host, Rachel, and my mission with this podcast is to be a voice for those who don't have a voice, bring awareness to mental health issues, provide value and solutions, and to change the culture when it comes to mental health within the DoD organizations. Hey, everyone, and thank you so much for coming back for another episode of Your Story Doesn't End Here. Today, my guest is Scott DeLuzio, who is an Army veteran who served 6 years in the Army National Guard, including a 2010 deployment to Afghanistan, where he coped with combat stress and the loss of his brother, Stephen. After returning home, he started the Drive On podcast to support fellow veterans by sharing personal stories of triumph and hardship. He currently resides in Surprise, Arizona with his wife, Vicky, and their three children. Scott, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity.
Yeah, so I've been following you on Instagram for some time now. I've been so excited to finally connect with you. And the bits and pieces that I know of your story are so powerful. So I'm going to pass it off to you to share. And I'm so excited to hear what you have to say today.
Yeah, absolutely. So like you said, I'm an Army veteran. I served about 6 years in the Connecticut Army National Guard. I was an infantryman. I deployed to Afghanistan in 2010. Really, I got my start in the military after this was after 9/11. And I think a lot of people who are old enough to remember 9/11, it's kind of weird to have to say that because it's actually been quite a while now that we actually do have adults who may not have remembered 9/11.
It
at this
doesn't
point, but,
feel like it, but yeah, you're right.
You know what I mean? Right. But yeah, so. You know, when 9/11 happened, I think myself and a lot of other Americans, we wanted to do something to help our country. And I was in college at the time, and I decided I was going to finish out the rest of my time in college. And if there was still anything going on as far as military or other, you know, things going on, I'd revisit it after I graduated. Just knowing myself, if I stop something and I don't finish it, I'm never going back and picking it back up. So I was already, you know, about halfway through college, and I said, let me just finish out college and I'll revisit this afterwards. So, so it was my younger brother actually joined the military before I did. He was going up to college in Vermont. It was a military college that he was going to, Norwich University, and he decided to join the Vermont Army National Guard. So I got to learn a little bit about the military through him. And then about a year after he joined, I started hearing these reports in the news that that the military was struggling to meet their recruiting numbers. And this was in like 2005, like summer of 2005 or so, maybe fall. And that just kind of pissed me off because I was like, what happened to all these people after 9/11 who were ready to go kick some ass, take names, do whatever it was that they were going to do? And I said, what happened to all these people? And I said, well, I was one of those people and I still haven't done anything. So I said, well, let me get off my butt and go do something. I'm still young enough. I'm fit. I'm capable of doing this. I might as well. And so that's how I got into the military. And, you know, as I was serving in the National Guard, for people who aren't familiar with the National Guard, it's you do the 1 week and one weekend a month training and 2 weeks a year for training. And then you are able to be called up to an active duty status as we were when we went to Afghanistan in 2010. That deployment My younger brother, Stephen, as you mentioned, he was also deployed to Afghanistan at the same time. We weren't in the same location, but we were both deployed there. So when he was there, he was out on a mission, and he unfortunately was killed in action. He was hit in an ambush, and he was killed pretty much immediately. So shortly after he was killed, I was notified. I was also out on a mission that day, and I was notified of his death, which was just obviously such a terrible news to get, especially so far away from home, from your family and loved ones and things like that. I was very fortunate to have the other soldiers who were with me who were there to support me and make sure I was okay and everything. Sadly though, about 15, 20 minutes or so after finding out that my brother was killed, my own unit that I was with, we got into a firefight as well. So I had to kind of just shove the grief and the sadness and all that, all those emotions aside, and focus on staying alive myself, because those types of things are very unpredictable, and you need to have your head in the game. So I did that, and within it was probably within 2 days I was home, back in the United States after all of that. So the next morning I left Afghanistan, flew to Kuwait, then to Germany, then home. So it was within a day and a half or so I was home, which seems nice. Like, it's great to be home and everything. That's a good thing. But I had like absolutely zero decompression time after literally being in a firefight, and all of that, and dealing with the loss of my brother. It was just such a roller coaster of emotions. Everything that was going on during those days were so incredibly difficult to deal with. And I don't think, like, after getting home, I don't think I really knew how to pick that back up, the grief back up, and actually deal with it. So I struggled a lot with anger issues and depression and drinking and all these other things just that were not healthy, not helping anything. And so eventually I ended up going and getting some help and trying to kind of turn things back around. About four years ago, maybe a little over 4 years ago, 4.5 years ago or so, I started my podcast, which you mentioned, the Drive On podcast. And I started that podcast because after coming back home, some of the soldiers that I served with started taking their lives by suicide. And that, to me, obviously one is too many, but that to me was just not acceptable, to just sit around waiting for the phone to ring for somebody else saying somebody else had taken their life. And so I decided to start the podcast because it wasn't just the people that I served with who were having trouble. It wasn't me and just those guys who were having trouble. It was the entire military community. So I wanted to provide a way for other veterans to share their stories of struggles that they overcame, be a source of inspiration for others, and to share other resources, things that people are unaware of, as far as nonprofits, maybe other forms of therapies that maybe the VA isn't offering, just different things like that would be helpful to these people. And so I've been doing that now for about 4 years. And it's really been an incredible journey, because I started off saying to myself, okay, I'm going to start a podcast. How the heck do I start a podcast? I have no idea how to do this. I didn't know anything, any of the technical side. I didn't know any of the equipment I needed or any of that kind of stuff. And so I was like, okay, well, I just have to figure it out. And that's what I did. And so I learned along the way. If you listen to some of the earlier episodes, they're probably not quite as clean or polished as some of the later ones, but I enjoyed the journey and learning how to do that, as well as listening to these stories from all these incredible people and all the incredible work that they're doing and the obstacles that they've had to overcome. It's really been just such an incredible journey. I also wrote a book called Surviving Son, which talks about my story and my brother's story as far as our deployment to Afghanistan and all the things that we went through and the aftermath of that too. And I wrote that really for a couple of reasons. One, I wanted to have some record of what I experienced while over there in Afghanistan. I want to have something to pass on to my kids and maybe their kids and so on and so forth. But also for everyone else to just have a piece of history from one person's perspective. You think back to previous generations, World War II, World War I, you know, even further back. You know, a lot of times people would come back from war, and the stories that they had lived in their head and in the heads of basically anybody else who they may have told those stories to, which may or may not be a lot of people. More times than not, it's probably not a lot of people. As a matter of fact, it's probably zero people. And so those stories die with those people, and they don't help us at all to understand what happens in combat and what happens to the individual who serves in combat. And so I wanted to have some sort of story that would outlive me and be there for other people to read and hopefully learn something from. And that's what I did with the book. So, I think that's kind of my story in a nutshell. I'm sure you have probably have some questions and things like that you might want to go over, but I think that's about it for me.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. And, you know, one of the things that intrigues me about having combat veterans on the show is that it's such a different world than what I experienced. You know, I served in the Navy 6.5 years, but I wasn't in a combat role. I didn't see that. And so it's always interesting to me hearing the really horrifying things that a combat vet has experienced. And I'd say every single one of you share your stories with such poise. And so I'm always just super curious what process you went through to be able to deal with all the things that you went through. And obviously for you, you went through something very unique. You lost your brother while you were out in combat. And obviously you had to compartmentalize that at that time. But I would love to just hear more about what that process was like for you dealing with that, among dealing with all the other things that you saw when you were out there deployed.
Yeah. So I think one of the biggest things for me was after coming back home, I, like a lot of other veterans and probably guys in general, I was just like, I'll deal with it. Yeah. This is a crappy situation right now. I'm sad, but of course I'm sad because my brother died, and I'm angry, and of course I'm angry. My brother died, and I'm having all these different emotions, but of course I'm going to have these because crappy things happen. So I'm going to feel crappy. And I found myself just kind of numbing the pain that I was dealing with. I drink more than I should. I was having trouble sleeping, so I'd wake up in the mornings just in a miserable mood, grumpy, still be angry. At night, I would drink to the point where I just kind of like pass out, which does not lend itself to very good sleep. And so in the mornings, I would just drink tons and tons of coffee and energy drinks and all that kind of stuff to get myself going. And that would end up being later on in the day. I would continue to do that, and that would then affect my sleep even more. And so it was just this vicious cycle of me not helping myself at all with the things that I was doing. It all came crashing down one day. I tell the story in my book, but my dog at the time, she was sick one day, and our bedroom in the house that we lived in at that time, our bedroom had white carpets, which was a stupid choice, I know. We had white carpets, and there's a bathroom right off the bedroom with tile floor. And the dog was walking towards the bathroom and just threw up right on the carpet, just like inches away from the tile floor. And I got so mad. I was yelling and screaming. I was like, just 2 inches that way, super easy to clean up. Now I got to get a steam cleaner. I'm yelling at this dog, and I'm like, the dog's sick. She doesn't understand a word that's coming out of my mouth. She understands I'm angry as all hell, but she doesn't understand anything, and I'm not making her feel any better. Who is this person? Who have I become? And that's when I decided I need to go get help, because I just didn't recognize myself anymore. You know, all the stuff that I dealt with while I was overseas, I just kind of shoved it down and found a little place for me to just kind of stick it, and I forgot about it. I just left it there, and I just stopped dealing with those things. And that wasn't very healthy. I mean, maybe at the time I needed to, like when I found out about my brother being killed and then being thrown into combat, I couldn't sit there crying while someone was shooting at me. Like, I needed to put that away and go deal with that situation in that moment. But once when that situation was over, I needed to do something with that. And I needed to process those emotions and not keep them stuffed down where they were. And so that's what I started to realize, is that I had to let the stuff out, and I had to have hard conversations with the therapist that I went to go talk to. I had to deal with all of this stuff. I had to take it back out and almost relive some of this stuff in order to get back to some sense of normalcy, not being this crazy angry person who would yell at his, you know, toddler son for making a mess by spilling his food at the dinner table. Like, that's what kids do. They're messy. Like, that, you don't need to yell at the kid for stuff like that. It was like, that's not the kind of dad I wanted to be either. I've since had two more kids since returning from Afghanistan. And, I want them to grow up and, think of me as, someone who was happy, who had their best interests in mind and was generally a good person. I don't want them to be like, oh yeah, dad was always grumpy and miserable and angry. He was screaming and yelling and doing all these things that just terrified us. Like, that's not the kind of guy I want to be. And so yeah, I had to go and just get help. I had to talk to somebody, and that was scary as hell, to be honest. I picked up the phone to make that appointment, the first appointment that I went to, and I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know if I was going to be, walking into an appointment and they're going to, lock me in some padded room, I didn't know what was going to happen. But I was like, whatever it is that I need to do, I need to do it. And if this is going to help, then I have to give it a try. Maybe it won't help. Maybe there's something else, but I got to start somewhere and I got to try something. And so that's kind of the process that I went through, after coming back.
So talk us through your therapy experience. And the reason I ask that is because I think a lot of people, like you just described, are very intimidated by therapy. So you said that you picked up the phone and you called. Would you mind talking us through what that experience was like after that phone call for you, up until you started seeing the therapist, and even beyond, and how that helped you as that progressed?
Yeah. So like I said, it was super scary to pick up the phone and call, because I didn't know what to expect. But the people that I talked to on the phone, super friendly, super nice. They got me in to see somebody. I called the vet center, and they got me in to see somebody. I want to say within a week, I had an appointment and I was in to see somebody. The guy that I talked to, he was also a combat veteran. He was really laid back, kind of chill kind of guy to talk to, really, really, really comfortable environment. Being able to talk to another veteran, veterans kind of know what each other are going through. There's some shared experiences, shared, lingo and other things like that, that just makes it easier to talk to. So to me, that was great having this guy to talk to. Maybe it was just him. Maybe it could have been any other veteran that I could have talked to, but in this case, it just happened to work out. And, so I was seeing him for about a year and a half, and it was kind of what you would expect, from watching TV shows or movies, what talk therapy might be, what you might expect from that. It was, I'd go in once a week. How are things going? And, we just talk for an hour or so. And those were the appointments. And, as he got to know me and my story a little bit more, he kind of helped guide the conversation and give me feedback and advice about, okay, what's bothering you? And here's the things that's bothering me. Okay, well, maybe this is something that you can do to help fix that problem. And, it took a little while, but I started feeling less angry. I wasn't 100% back to the guy that I was before I went to Afghanistan, but I also kind of thought to myself, I don't know that I'll ever be that guy, or maybe I don't even want to be that guy, because, all the experiences that we have, they change us. And I don't want to just forget about what happened in Afghanistan. I don't want to, you know, forget about my brother altogether. I am a changed person. And so maybe it's okay that I'm not 100% the same guy that I was. And so came to a point where the guy that I was talking to, he was moving to a different facility in another state. And I, my family and I also were moving at the same time. And so I said to myself, you know what, this just seems like a good time to end this, the therapy. I seem to be doing better. I'm not as angry as I was before. I have things under control, you know, a little bit better. And so I said, okay, you know what, this is just a good time to cut it off. And so I moved out here to Arizona from Connecticut, where I'm originally from. And I was okay for a little bit. I wasn't getting super angry. I wasn't, you know, having all these outbursts. I wasn't doing any of the things that I was doing before. Things were going pretty well. And then a little while later, I started noticing myself kind of slip back into some of those old habits. I was getting angry, really frustrated over the littlest of things. You know, I found myself drinking more. I found myself not sleeping very well. And I said, okay, well, something needs to change. Obviously something popped back up here. And so I need to go, you know, get some help. And so I went to the VA this time, and the VA, you know, provide me with, you know, psychologists, and they worked with me, and, you know, through different forms of therapy. And this was all during like the COVID time period. So all of it was like we're talking right now through like telehealth kind of things. So, which was actually in a way, it was kind of nice because I got to do all the therapy from the comfort of my home. You know, in a way it was kind of weird because it's like I'm talking to a computer screen, and it was a little bit different than going into the office and talking to the person in person, but you know, it was what it was. You know, and I got exposed to a lot of different forms of therapy through that. And you know, what I realized through this whole experience is that mental health is you know, a little bit different than physical health. Like if you were to break your arm, you know, you go to the doctor, they put a cast on your arm, they set it, heals, they take the cast off, and generally speaking, you're pretty good. You don't need to continue going to follow-ups year after year after year to make sure that your arm's still good. Like it's pretty good. Unless you do something to break it again, you're probably pretty much okay. But mental health is a little bit different, I found, at least for myself, because, you know, it's a ongoing process. And if you aren't keeping up with it, you know, especially if you've experienced some sort of traumas, if you're not keeping up with it, you may slip back down the wrong direction. And so I found that, you know, I kind of need to experience different forms of therapies and maybe even just go back and get like a checkup the way you might go to, you know, an annual checkup with your physical doctor, right? And so it's just that type of thing to kind of help keep me on track and keep me going in the right direction. And so that's really been the experience that I've had. And, you know, in full transparency with everybody here, I still, you know, go to therapy. I'm kind of in a break between sessions at this point, but, you know, it's still something that's on my radar, and I will continue until I feel like I'm at a point where it's no longer necessary, but that may be possibly even a long time in the future.
Well, thank you so much for sharing. And I think a lot of what you say with the maintenance thing, it speaks to the stigma that so many of us in the space, yourself included, work so hard to break, because mm-hmm. mental health, it should be something that is considered preventative. When we start as children going to the doctor for a whole body physical, I don't remember that ever including anything mental, but how cool would it be if as just a nation in general outside of military and vets, we started implementing mental health as just a normal part of checkups, like you talk about with that checkup piece. I think that mental health is still considered something negative, where, you know, if you're mm-hmm. in a state of crisis, then you go see the therapist, or they used to call it the shrink, and, you know, all these negative words, right? And right. So I love that you bring up this idea of maintaining, because it's so true. We're constantly evolving as people. And the more that we evolve and learn and grow, we are a different person. So what worked for therapy a year ago may not work for therapy today. And so that's right. Such an important thing.
And new issues come up too, from time to time. You know, it may be something that, you know, you haven't thought about in 20 years, and it just kind of came back to you. And it's like, oh my gosh, I forgot all about this thing that happened to me. And now it's like, I can't stop thinking about it. And so like, go talk to someone and to handle it. Don't just try to shove it back to where it went, because it popped out for a reason. So, you know, go do something about that. Right.
Right. Absolutely. So how did losing your brother, how did that affect your family dynamic?
Yeah, it was hard on all of us, obviously. You know, when I first came home from Afghanistan, it was just a weird feeling to me, because it's like there, it always was like my mom, my dad, me, and my brother. It was always just the four of us. And we would, you know, we lived in the house that we grew up in, the house that my parents lived in, you know, at the time. And, you know, going home and seeing his room, like, he's never going to go back in this room. He's, you know, it was just a strange thing. But, you know, it caused some, you know, some heartache and, you know, things like that amongst us. I think all of us were, you know, really struggling to cope with the loss. And, you know, sometimes, you know, especially with my anger issues, sometimes I'd take things out on people that I really shouldn't have. And, you know, other people might've said things or done things. And it was hard, you know, at the time, but I think, you know, we've worked through those issues, and we've kind of overcome a lot of that. And so we all are, you know, together, and we're, you know, it's not like we're estranged family or anything like that, but it was, you know, for a little while, we were coping and grieving in our own ways. And, you know, sometimes that might've conflicted with each other, and that it was a hard thing to do, but we got through that, and we managed to, you know, come out on the other side, of all of that, you know, not completely, you know, torn apart, like a torn apart family or anything like that. We cope with it, and we dealt with it.
And I think what you've done with writing your book is such a beautiful way to honor his life. And I also want to acknowledge how incredible your ability to self-reflect on your own mental health and your own personal state is. And I really can see that throughout hearing your story, these times that you've checked in and noticed something about yourself that this might be a little bit off. What can I do to optimize? And understanding that probably wasn't an overnight process, that probably took a lot of time for you, but sure, it's incredible where you've gotten with that. As far as your podcast goes, I'm curious, and I probably know the answer, but just for you to share it with the people, what keeps you going with that podcast?
Well, I, like I said earlier, I started the show when, you know, we lost several soldiers that I served with. You know, one soldier was too many to lose. Then we lost a second. And then, you know, that number just seemed like it kept going up. And I was like, I don't want to continue to have these phone calls saying that someone took their life, or, you know, any of that kind of stuff, or even that they were on the brink of that, and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. Like, I want to help people realize that it's okay to get help. And if the help that you've received doesn't seem like it's working, there's other kinds of help out there. And I want to share as many different kinds of resources as I can. Honestly, I feel like unless something major happens in my life where it prevents me from doing this type of thing, so long as that 22 veterans a day committing suicide number is anywhere north of zero, I'm going to keep doing it. And so that means I'm going to keep doing this, you know, until there are no more veteran suicides. And I know that's a, you know, a big goal, you know, because that's, you know, one person trying to do that. But as I'm talking to other people and, you know, spreading different messages with the audience that, that listens to the show. Hopefully those people can take on some of the message that I'm spreading and help spread that out throughout their circles. And it's kind of like a ripple in the water, you know, it's like one person throws one pebble in the water and then it kind of ripples out and it goes out and spreads, to, you know, all the shores of, you know, the lake or wherever. And so that's what I'm trying to do. And if I keep doing this till I'm 80, then I'll keep doing it until I'm 80. And I don't really care, you know, like I'll do it as long as I need to, you know, so long as, you know, it's helping people.
So what are some of the positive stories or things that have come out of your podcast platform that you've heard of?
You know, for me, it's the messages that I get from the listeners who say, like, just small, simple things. Like, I really needed to hear that today. You know, like, I don't know what that person was going through. Like, maybe that person had a gun in their mouth and they were ready to end it all. And they heard this message and they're like, you know what? Okay, well, maybe tomorrow, you know, I can live to see tomorrow. And like, great, man. Like, I helped you in some way. I don't know if it was that dramatic or if it was just like, hey, I'm having a crappy day. And that was an uplifting, positive message, gave me a little bit of hope, and made someone's day that much better. And so I get those types of messages from time to time. And you know, they're not all the time, but, you know, a lot of times people who are going through, you know, crappy situations, they don't always stop and think to write messages like that. But when I do get them, I know that it's helped at least that one person. And to me, that's what I'm here for. Like, I want to, I started the whole thing. I said, if I can help save just one person, this all will be worth it. And so, you know, I get these messages from time to time. I know I've helped at least one person, more than one person. And so, you know, the longer I do this, the bigger the audience will get, the more people I can help. You know, I feel like it's just kind of the thing that I'm going to do. And I feel like it would be almost selfish of me to stop doing it for, you know, whatever reason. It would have to be a really good reason, I think, for me to stop.
Well, I can relate the same with this podcast platform. So I really have such a deep appreciation for what you do. How can we support you? Is there something you're currently working on, or what is your vision? How can we come together and support what you're doing?
You know, honestly, the goal for me with my show is to help veterans and their families. So I just kind of lump everyone in the military community, whether they're currently serving, the veterans, their family members, because sometimes the veterans are not the ones who always are listening to the show. Sometimes it's a family member who's like, okay, there's something going on with this, you know, our loved one here. I don't know what to do. I'm at my wit's end. I don't know how to help them. And they end up listening to the show and they get, stuff that they can use it as advice. And maybe it's because, they're dropping that little bits of advice to that veteran who's struggling with something, that causes them to take some sort of action on whatever it is, so, you know, going to get help or, you know, seeking out some of these resources, you know, and as far as I'm concerned, that's great. Like, I'm not concerned with who's actually listening to it, so long as it's helping somebody. And so with that, help out any way that you can, for these veterans. If there's a nonprofit that kind of resonates with you, maybe it's in your area, go volunteer with them and help the veterans. Because my goal is to help veterans, with all of the things that they're dealing with. Could be struggling with finances or their relationships or, substance abuse, or, I don't know, you name it, any number of things, that they could be dealing with. I want to help them because all of those things could be reasons that people end up making that decision to, take their own life. And so if we can help make all of those things better in some way, then it's less likely that those people are going to come to that decision. And so my goal is helping veterans. And if you're asking, how can I help me achieve my goals? Hey, listen to the podcast if you want. Great. You know, that helps boost my vanity numbers and give me more listens and downloads and all that kind of stuff. Wonderful. That makes that makes you know, the sponsors or whatever feel good, then great. I don't care so much about that. I care that the veterans are the ones that are getting help. So if you can go out and volunteer somewhere or donate to a nonprofit that's helping veterans, you know, go do that. Listen to the podcast if you want to, but help out veterans, I think, is the biggest thing.
I love that. And there's so many different organizations and resources. I'd say all the time that the resources exist out there. But sometimes people just don't know how to find them, or a lot of them really are underfunded. So what an incredible way to give back is just to encourage people, find that organization, find one that resonates with you, whether it's supporting families, veterans, active duty reservists, and just help. And it doesn't always have to be monetary. Volunteering helps too. So speaking of your podcast, where can people find you online to support you and your platform?
Yeah. So the podcast is Drive On Podcast. You can go to driveonpodcast.com, or you can search for it in any of your favorite podcast apps, you know, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, you name it. Wherever you listen to podcasts, you can find Drive On Podcast. The book that I wrote that I mentioned earlier, Surviving Son, that's available on Amazon. So if you want to pick up a copy there, you can grab it there. You can go also to the driveonpodcast.com website if you want a signed copy. That was something that was completely like foreign to me when I wrote this book. I was like, who would want me to sign a book? But apparently there's enough people who did that I started offering it on the website. And so I could do signed copies for you as well through driveonpodcast.com. That's pretty much where you can find me, and on all the major social medias at Drive On Podcast as well.
Hey, you never know. Those signed copies may be super famous someday, so don't underestimate your signature. All right, Scott. Well, I am going to leave you with the last thing, and that is going to be, you know, if you have any advice or any last words that you want to leave the audience with today.
Yeah, I think my biggest advice for people is that if you're somebody who is struggling with whatever it is that you might be struggling with, go talk to somebody and go get help. You don't have to talk to your spouse or, you know, people like that. If you're not comfortable sharing certain things with them, go find a therapist somewhere. Go to the VA if you're a veteran. Go, you know, open up the phone book. I know I'm showing my age by saying that, but you know, go to Google and find a therapist in your area that can help with whatever it is that you're dealing with. And if you're not the person who's struggling, but you recognize that there's somebody in your life who's struggling with something, they're not quite the same person that they used to be. Just listen. Just say, hey, I'm not here to fix anything. I'm not trying to change anything or fix anything right now. I'm just here to listen. I know you're going through something. I can't understand necessarily what it is that you're going through, because I'm not going through it myself, or maybe I never have gone through something like that, but I'm here to listen. And just tell me what's going on. And yeah, I might be able to say, yeah, that sucks. I can only imagine, you know, what you're going through, but listen and be that shoulder to cry on, if you will. You know, if it seems like it's something that's a little bit more serious than you can handle, like help them go find the help that they need, and just be there for them.
Thank you for taking the time to listen in today. With your support, we are able to increase awareness of the mental health issues affecting service members and veterans today, with the goal of creating positive change. If you got value from this episode, please take 30 seconds to subscribe and share this episode within your own network. Until next time, remember, your story matters, your mental health matters, and your story doesn't end here.